Excuse me, this is the operator. This meeting is now being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time.
All right, great.
Please.
Thanks very much, Luis.
Okay. Thanks, Luis. So welcome, everybody. It's Andy. I'm just going to kick the meeting off very quickly with our standard roll call. If you do not hear your name, please let me know. I've got Mike O'Connor, Craig Schwartz, Neil Warner, Andrew Steingrudel, John Christoph, Barry Cobb, John McElwain, Joe St. Sauer, Michael Pallais, Francisco Arias, Paul Smosher, David Piscatello, Steve Hostin, Jeff Schmidt, and Brian Cute. Did I miss anybody? All right. So I think on today's agenda, there's just a couple of administrative issues. First of all, the wiki seems to be going well. People are contributing. If you're still having trouble getting in or using the wiki, please let Craig or me know. Again, I'm trying to look for who is going to be in attendance in Nairobi. If you could send out if everyone could send out a message to the HSTLD group to say will be attending or will not be attending, that would be helpful. We have a meeting in Nairobi that we're trying to set up. Right now it's scheduled for Thursday from 3 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. Nairobi time. And we'll be obviously releasing additional information about that meeting as Nairobi draws closer. So again, if anyone has any questions on that, please let me know. With that, Mike, I'm going to turn the meeting over to you. I believe today in the agenda we want to talk a little bit about recapping of what's been going on in the HSTLD email and so forth. So take it away.
Yeah, I would appreciate that. Andy, could you do me a favor? When you were going through the roll, I usually try to write everyone's name down so that I could proactively engage the list participants. So could you perhaps just shoot me an email with everyone who's on the call today so that I
will do. I keep a running list like that sort of weekly from now on, Mike, so I can do that as a process for you.
Yeah, if you could just send that to me in the next, minute or two so I could, shall I say, proactively engage everyone. Is Paul Stahar on the call today?
Not that I can say.
Not that we have, which is a shame. So one of the things, and I was hoping Paul was on the call because I think Paul raises some good points in some of his exchange with Dave. And for those people that have not read that exchange that has taken place within the last, say, 24 hours, I would encourage everyone to read that. And the reason I think that exchange is important is it goes to the heart of something that I think is very critical. At what point in time does the outcome or the work effort of this group cross over from being voluntary to potentially mandatory? And if it does cross that line of voluntary to mandatory, what are the potential consequences of that within the marketplace? As I said, from a competition standpoint, as Paul has raised, to potentially potentially legal consequences as well. Craig Schwartz, you and I recall from some of our prior dealings, I think, in connection with the Dot Co-op contract. In original ICANN registry contracts, there was an indemnification where ICANN had to indemnify the registry operator in connection with mandatory policies. In the new agreement, that no longer exists. So these are some of the legal things that I think, as we do our work, we need to be aware of the potential consequences of the actions we take, and perhaps I think put in or hard code potential safety mechanisms to allow other impacted people to make sure that their concerns are taken account of. And again, this is one of the things that the AOC takes specifically states in the affirmation of commitments. So I guess that's one thing I just would like to kind of just put out there. Dave, you're on the call. I mean, again, it's unfortunate that we do not have Paul on today's call, but, I mean, could you perhaps maybe summarize your exchange for those that may not have had the benefit of reading the email list to discuss this voluntary versus mandatory aspects of a high security zone?
Well, I feel like we're circling the drain, to be quite honest, because at the outset of the advisory group, one of the things that I thought Kurt and Greg had explained was that the purpose of the advisory group was to help produce an iteration of the concept paper that took the concept a little bit further into something that could actually be actionable and implementable. I didn't believe, and I still don't believe, that it's the purpose of this committee or this group to question whether or not it should be voluntary or mandatory. That's a question for the broader community to decide. And so I wish we could actually get to using and making the best use of some of the volunteers who are experts in auditing, are experts in assessment and security, and spend less time on issues that are really peripheral to what our purpose is. Now, maybe that's wrong. And if it's wrong, then perhaps we need to cycle back to Greg and Kurt. But that's my understanding.
Hey, Michael, may I get in the queue, please? This is Steve Holston.
Steve, sure. And Andy, have you popped me that list? So because
I sent it to you, Michael.
Thank you very much. And Dave, one of the things I would like to acknowledge is your openness, transparency, and candor, which is not exactly standard for other interactions with ICANN staff. So thank you very much, because your interaction actually helps us as a team move forward on this. But to get back to the question of why we're here, one of the things that I think I originally raised on one of the first points in Andy's paper was in the opening paragraph or on the opening page, there were comments submitted. Now, we have heard from BITS, from Paul Smucker, who provided some very constructive input on their comments. But one of the things I asked was, could ICANN identify the other people that commented to it during the consultation process that brought us here? Because we need to, again, why we're here, if we're arguing why we're here or what we're supposed to do, we need to look back at that sort of, if you will, the trail or the documents that, if you will, brought us to do our task. So that's just one of the outstanding issues I think that I had asked previously, as well as I think the original communication from Paul Toomey to BITS back in June of 2009, which, again, still has not yet, I think, been posted on the ICANN Correspondents website. So documenting this, I think, is very important because you're right, Dave. When this goes to the potential broader community and to see whether this is voluntary or mandatory, I think we need to do our homework and have a clear record of what we did and why we did it. If we don't do that and we're only looking at this very myopically, I don't think we're doing a service to the greater community. That's obviously Mike Pelagia's personal opinion, not as chair or co-chair. So, perhaps, we could get sort of a list. Steve, you said you wanted to comment on this.
I would like to, Michael, and I have a little different concept of the mission that we have at this point, and I have raised it before that in the purpose that we are here to discuss the viability of this kind of a program, not to discuss the implementation details, but I think we are jumping two steps ahead if we start implementing without deciding first and foremost whether this is even a good idea, because I'm not convinced that we have cleared that hurdle already. So I think I'm not sure how you differentiate those if we want to just take as a given that it's a good idea, and for the sake of argument, then flesh out what would it look like if so. We could potentially proceed in that manner, but I still have very real concerns about the threshold, should we even do this. And I think when this was introduced in the last DAG, that was very much a point. We are considering this kind of a program. Should we do it? Let's ask the community to discuss, not let's ask the community to discuss the implementation details of something that's a fait accompli. That's a very different approach.
So can I respond to that, please?
Please, Dave, go.
Yeah. So there are a couple of things that I think need to be clarified. One is that a straw man is not a fait accompli. A straw man is something that people could decide is tractable or not. And the purpose of taking the paper that we have now, which is in atmospheric descriptions, 100,000 feet above, above the Earth, and trying to bring it closer for scrutiny, is, I think a very valid one, and it's one that is very consistent with sound engineering practice. You can't ask someone whether something is implementable or actionable unless you give them some details about what it looks like. So from purely technical standpoint, I don't think that anyone could actually take the concept paper as it is written today and understand all the implications. So the purpose I'm trying to satisfy here is to put more meat on that bone so that people can actually make an informed decision. Now, Michael also asked about who other than Paul Smoker and the Bits and the other financials made contributions. I thought I had answered that question and that it was posted on the wiki, that I had given you all the sources that were contributors to the original concept paper. Is there more that you need? Do you need individual people to actually attest to this? I'm just confused.
No, Dave, what I will do is, you gave a lot of excellent data points, but all those data points were, I think, ESSAC papers. So is this, and this is a very, this I think, putting on my lawyer's hat, I think is a very important distinction. If ESSAC, which is ICANN, is the driving force of this recommendation, as opposed to the private sector or the bottom-up process, there's a very different distinction of whether this becomes voluntary or whether this becomes mandatory, and potentially goes to the heart of legal liability for those registry operators or registration authorities that may have to implement it. So what I'm looking for here, Dave, is I'm trying to document why we're here. So as I said, Paul Smoker, the stuff with Bits, excellent stuff, and they did the right thing by contributing through the public forum in connection with the DAG to advance these ideas. But many of the other things that you referenced as kind of background material are all, I would say, ICANN generated. They're all ESSAC reports. ICANN staff generated. So I guess that's what I'm trying to reconcile, and why it's very important for us to get this right. If we don't get this bedrock principles down right, it's basically going to come back, I think, to haunt us at a later date.
This is Steve again. Can I jump in once more?
Well Steve, what I want to do is, Steve and Dave, what I want to do here is, I want to engage other people here. So Steve and Dave, I have you both in the queue. John Levine, who has, I think from an ALAC perspective or an individual user, John, you've commented on the list. Could you perhaps interject some of your points? And again, I want to try to get everyone on the list here, the experts, so I'm going to be pulling some teeth here. So, John, could you perhaps?
Yeah, Jeff, please.
Who is that, Jeff?
Yeah, please, thank you.
Okay. John?
Yeah, I'm here. I mean, I don't see any possibility of making this mandatory for every registry. I mean, I think it needs to be an add-on that is well defined and well audited, so that if a registry decides it wants to be secure because it's marketing to some category of registrant that it considers it to be worth paying a lot of extra money for a much more secure domain than they can get it. You know, and the standard example is banks, but they're not the only one. But my model is that this is not going to appeal to the pizza shop in the corner. This is going to appeal to organizations that are at least, you know, a bank, so that if they have to pay a few thousand dollars, that's well within their budget for the value they should get.
Okay. Thank you, John. Jeff, Jeff Smith, was that you that wanted to speak next in the queue?
So without getting ahead of myself, I actually agree with what John just stated in that this is, you know, certainly not a one-size-fits-all, and I would encourage everybody to, you know, look at the DAG 3 requirements already, in that, you know, ICANN is already very serious about having, you know, registry operators of very high quality, and the performance and uptime and, you know, other requirements in there already indicate a very high level of operational excellence that I think is going to be very, very indicative of the types of operations that, you know, we're already going to see. So, you know, that said, I think that a lot of what we're doing here is, a lot of this discussion is symptomatic of a larger issue that we keep, you know, kind of going around and around, which is I don't think we're clear on this point, on the point of, you know, why are we here and for what purpose. You know, who does this program benefit? But then also there's a subtle point that I think is coming up here, and let me try to portray it a little bit differently. For an ICANN program, I think that there is an additional test, which is why is ICANN the right place for this program? For any given program that, you know, you might be considering, there's a question about, you know, whether it's correct for ICANN to administer that program or for this to be purely a, you know, private sector or commercial-driven program. And I think that we're lacking some clarity on that test. What unique value can the fact that this is an ICANN program add? How does it help the space of, you know, all internet participants and overall security and stability, et cetera, making this an ICANN program as opposed to just having it be completely commercial-driven for folks that are interested?
Thank you. And who was that? Was that Jeff Schmidt that was just speaking? You didn't announce yourself at the beginning.
That was Jeff Schmidt. I thought
Jeff?
I was called on.
I did call, but sometimes some team members try to interject. So thank you. I thank you for clarifying that, Jeff. Let's see, just going through here. Paul, we have you on. I know you're on the call. And again, if you could contribute, I know at times we've interjected the Financial Services Roundtable or BITS into this discussion based upon your initial exchange with ICANN. Could you, again, I appreciate the great work that you've done in laying some of the groundwork for the group, but can you identify other people perhaps in the DAG that have called for this, or were there other people during your discussions with ICANN that you were reaching out to and formulating some of your preliminary exchanges? We're just trying to build the record here for what we're doing, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Sure, I'd be happy to. You know, I guess my first comment would be more general than specific to your question, and the general comment would be, in our submission, we were admittedly being relatively parochial here in looking at the financial services sector in general. You know, I don't know that we were intending to suggest that all new GTLDs or all existing GTLDs, to that bigger point, needed to be as secure as what we were suggesting financial services GTLDs need to be. So, you know, if there is some inference that we were looking for an all or none kind of scenario, that certainly wasn't the intent. You know, I do tend to believe comment that I think was made earlier that there are likely other other services or sectors where it makes sense to have more secure GTLD. Healthcare is probably one that comes to mind pretty immediately. But, you know, there was no intent to have Joe's Pizza Shop if Joe was so good at making pizzas that he had $185,000 sitting in the corner somewhere to apply for his own GTLD. There was no inference that that kind of GTLD would need the kind of security we're talking about here. But to your specific question, we worked with, or at least ran our recommendations by a number of different organizations. We had a couple of the registry operators that we were running our stuff by, VeriSign, and if I recall correctly, Neustar was certainly there. We had, actually, let me pull up the list while we're talking here. We certainly, you know, in terms of the discussions we had in Korea, APWG was certainly involved in some of these discussions. Trying to think who else was on that panel. Hang on, let me grab my stuff here.
And Paul, while you're looking for that, you know, I appreciate this clarification because sometimes in the ICANN process, one's original intent gets morphed and manipulated. So it is very constructive to go back to I think your point of this originally being directed towards financial services and how what we're looking at now is potentially, as I said, something potentially much broader, you know, the high security zone is. So, and what this potentially impacts. So I appreciate that clarification of BITS's original intent. I'll go back to you if you've been able to find that other documentation you were looking for there.
Give me a second, and I'll jump in when I find it.
Okay. All right. So what I'll do here is, Francisco, I don't think I have heard any contributions from you. Would you like to take the floor and perhaps contribute on this discussion here?
Hi, hey, Michael. I don't think I have anything new to add to the discussion. I certainly believe that this program, and this is my personal opinion, should not be something imposed to every single TLD operator. I think this is a decision that every TLD has to make in case they want to have this program them. And I don't really have anything new to add to this discussion.
Thank you, Francisco. And again, I think you're just reinforcing the voluntary aspect of what we're doing here. So I appreciate that. We have Joe. Joe, would you like to contribute on this topic here?
I think Dave Piscatello pretty well has it nailed. I mean, I don't view this as something that's going to be imposed on every registry. I think it's something that's going to have some niches where it makes a lot of sense, and a lot of registries, a lot of TLDs where it simply wouldn't be applicable. And I'd probably like to get down to brass tacks and start moving forward.
Okay, Joe. And as I said, we will try to do that. That obviously is our intention.
Mike, it's Andy. Can I get into the queue?
Sure, Andy. I'm working my way up. You're at the top of the list. I think you're first on the list. So, or do you appear at all on the list? You're on the top. I actually started from the bottom, working towards the top.
Now wait.
Having Pelage, P is a last name. I was always I always liked it when the teachers in grade school started from the bottom and went.
I know.
Up,
I'm usually
so.
A W. I'm used to going last anyway.
Sorry. Okay. So Joe, John. If you'd like to contribute, John McElwain?
You know, I'm definitely in favor of a voluntary certification program. I'm a bit confused as to how we're even on the topic of this being mandatory. You know, I agree. Let's try to move forward. If we can get past this issue, I believe it should be voluntary.
Okay, and the reason, if I can, John, the only reason we're I think we're having this discussion of voluntary is there have been some people, for example, law enforcement, that were their position is some of the requirements with registrant verification, some of the components aligned with these high some of the brass tacks that Joe referred to regarding implementation, there are some brass tacks that law enforcement in Seoul indicated their intention as wanting to be mandatory in all new in all GTLDs. So that I think is part of the concern. The other concern regarding some of the people I think on this call who participate in the more day-to-day activities of ICANN policy development is in connection with the DAG. One of the issues that has been rather controversial within the broader community is the issue of separation, vertical integration between registry and registrar. And right now, the GNSO is moving forward with a PDP on vertical integration. But ICANN staff has taken the position, at least in the initial staff report, saying that with regard to new GTLDs, they have the ability to act under the implementation of new GTLDs. So the ability for staff, or again, this is, I think, a concern, and those that may disagree with me, please correct me, but there is a concern that staff has the, ICANN staff has the authority, or they believe they have the authority under this new GTLD implementation to make actions, potentially make something voluntary. I mean, that is potentially within their remit. So that, I think, is why we're having this discussion regarding voluntary versus mandatory, and why I think some people, again, including myself, would like to make sure that there are appropriate safeguards should ICANN staff take our output and somehow try to make it mandatory. So I hope that answers, John, your question. And again, that's my perception, and if anyone disagrees, they can correct me.
And Michael, I also think that there's been a lot of concentration on the security side, which is obviously that's where all the cost is. I almost think that there'd be very little controversy over the idea that processes to mitigate against malicious conduct are a useful, topic to be undertaking. So anyways, that's all I have to say on that topic.
Thank you, John. Barry Cobb, you're up.
Yes, this is Barry Cobb. I think for the most part I'm kind of going with the party line here. Certainly everything that we create here is voluntary. It seems like the best that we're going to be able to do is put together some sort of framework that helps establish what a high security zone would look like. Certainly there are, ultimately I think the market itself is going to dictate or position which TLDs would start signing up for what would be a high security zone and not. But it almost seems like where we're at right now is that there's a black and white. We're either high security or we aren't. And, Michael, you had just mentioned that there was a discussion by law enforcement that they would like to see certain components be mandatory across the TLD. So it sounds like maybe we need almost a tiered approach. And, again, all of this voluntary, but, some sort of minimum almost high security model that says this, and this, that, maybe that the law enforcement would consider minimum things to sign up for or strongly recommended. And then you have the more advanced tier, which is where the banks and maybe like healthcare or those kinds of organizations would sign up for a much higher security zone. So that's about all I have to offer for now. Thank you.
Mike, can I interject something that's relevant here about law enforcement?
Sure, Dave. Go.
This is Dave Piscitella. So you know, there is a GNSO RAA drafting team And many of the issues that that law enforcement had indicated they would prefer to see as mandatory that are overlap what tends to be discussed in the high security TLD program, and they've been submitted and are enumerated in a list of of amendments for consideration. Steve Metalis is running that group, and Margie Milam would be able to point you to the wiki. But if you go there and you look at the current spreadsheet, you will see that at least my interpretation of what is happening is that law enforcement's concerns about the need to have some of these elements mandatory for all TLDs and for all registrars is already being considered.
Exactly, Dave. And thank you for, I think, reiterating the point is what happens, right? One of the things that, my experience with governments is if they don't get what they're looking for in one fora or one venue, they potentially go and try to secure those interests in another venue. So while this is going on in the RAA, again, many of the points that law enforcement are raising individually, personally, I agree with. But the broader question is not what I agree with in law enforcement, but what I think the broader ICANN community finds as a consensus position. So the fact that law enforcement are advocating these issues within the RAA, we need to be cognizant of the fact that if they do not get implemented there, do they potentially find their way of getting implemented or mandated through this high security zone? I think that's the reason where there's this concern among, I think, the team members about ensuring the voluntary nature of this program and potentially to have safeguards should, at some later point in time, these recommendations somehow go from voluntary to mandatory. So I have now Andy. I've worked my way up on the list. You're up. You have the floor. Go ahead.
All right. Thanks, Mike. So just want to very quickly say that I obviously agree with the group. I think that from its inception, as the guy that really authored the concept paper, I can say Kurt and the rest of the ICANN group that I was working with was very adamant about keeping this program voluntary. So just as point of historic reference, I want to put that out there. A couple of thoughts that I want to get to the group as we go forward, I think will help us shape some of this material as well. And the thought is, so the concept paper really is in different pieces. And if you look at it in terms of its flow, we talk about what it does. We form the foundation of what controls are, and then we talk about programs to support the controls. One of the things that I think we should sort of be mindful of as a group is that we're sort of talking about things that are further off in the concept, and by that I mean, is it a scorecard? Are we creating a scorecard or a certification? How many levels of certification? Those pieces of the concept are further off and lack, I think, some of the appropriate clarity that we need on shorter-term goals to really be precise about what we think the right answer is as a group. To get there, we built a really decent foundation. We put together a purpose and goals, and we're starting to look at some principles. But the real foundation of our material that I think we need to get to as quickly as we can to sort of speak to some of the earlier callers are the actual controls themselves. And what those controls will provide us are a number of things. First, they give us a community sort of sponsored look at good security and operational and perhaps, as noted earlier, malicious conduct-reducing activities that are what I'll call good practices that could be in place at any TLD. Our group, the power of our group, is that it's a community that's sort of coming together and saying, here's what we think as a community defines sort of good control at the TLDs around those dimensions. How those controls are consumed becomes a question that's easier to answer after they've been defined. And then you can come back and say, well, should we have a report cards for TLD to report if they're using the controls or not? Should we have a certification program that allows some body, be it ICANN or be it a third party? And I think that, I can't speak for ICANN, but I'm betting they would be okay with a third party sort of taking over that, responsibility. Should there be a certification body that people can go to certify that they have those controls in place? What portions of control should be in a certification? Should there be multiple levels? All of those questions are great questions, but until we get that agreed-upon body of controls, they're just theory, you know, and there are a lot of people perhaps wringing their hands on some sides or vehemently wanting action on the other side. But until we get that community agreed-upon control set, it's very difficult to have those conversations. So I think in this group, getting to that level as quickly and as smartly as we can is a really, really good next step, and that's kind of what I wanted to offer to the group.
Thank you, Andy, and I agree. We need to get to the control elements. I would prefer to get there smartly as opposed to quickly. Smartly, I would say, is my primary driving force. But I really do welcome that contribution. And what I'd like to do here is we have about three speakers left. I'd like to get through them, and then I would like to turn the remainder of this call, and we could potentially go a couple of minutes late today, to you, Andy, to perhaps go through the high-level view that you provided in the original agenda today. So, you know, we can address Joe's concerns of beginning to get to some brass tacks on today's call. But I do think it is important to periodically reassess what we're doing and take a check here. So just to get through the last people, I got Andy, Neil, and Mikey. Andrew?
Wait, which one?
Andrew, PayPal. PayPal.
Yeah, that's me. I just sent mail to the list, and I think the interesting question, I think, is going to be to what extent, you know, this gets solved by some consensus of folks to documenting the controls, and to what extent this gets settled by lawsuits and things like that as to how many of these controls are voluntary and what a registrant's expectation should be about the security controls at their registrar or registry, right? The Baidu guys are suing register.com for weak security controls right now. What set of criteria are those folks going to use to judge this, right? There's going to be some set of criteria to determine whether they were negligent or not and had adequate controls in place, and it's just not clear what set really ought to apply to a regular registrant there, right? And you know, Baidu says they suffered economic harm, and they're going after their registrar. Somebody's going to establish through case law, if not through some voluntary program here, a set of criteria that they're going to have to follow. Otherwise, they're negligent, right? So whether we like it or not, there are going to be sets of security controls that get applied to TLDs, voluntarily or not, because people are going to sue them for harm when they do a bad job. Or when an incident happens, there's going to be lawsuits and there's going to be cases that settle some of this, you know, whether we like it or not. So,
excellent, Andy. I could not agree more with those comments. And what that shows is the market is working. This is not ICANN imposing something. This is the market, which lawsuits and
We don't want courts actually setting that, Mike. I don't think that is actually the market working isn't that everybody gets sued. It's that they can actually tell what controls are in place and can actually judge accordingly what they're willing to pay for them. And then people are held accountable when the criteria are clear ahead of time and they can claim that they weren't met. When there are no criteria ahead of time, then nobody has any idea what their expectation should be. Right? And there's no way to judge whether somebody was meeting those expectations. We don't want it settled that way. I don't think that's actually healthy.
Okay.
Amen.
Well, I appreciate that point. I guess what my comments there, Andy, were with regard to the practice of tasting, right, which was somewhat the scourge of the industry. One of the impetuses of that being resolved were a number of lawsuits where trademark owners challenged the business practices. And what happened as a result of that was two registries, Affilius and Neustar, put forth a proposal to mitigate that. That was then adopted as consensus policy by the GNSO, and the scourge known as the main name tasting has ended. So I note your point very validly that it's not best to have lawyers resolve these issues. That being said, there are times that lawsuits can somehow motivate the market to work and address those concerns. So I think you're right. If we focus on those control elements and give them a scorecard or a roadmap, we then could allow the good actors to choose what they do or do not want to do. So thank you for perhaps correcting my overly aggressive lawyer comments there. But I, as I said, I agree with everything you've said. I think it's very important. Neil Warner, you are up and have the floor.
All right. Yeah, I agree with the that it needs to start out being voluntary, and that to the process will dictate if it ever becomes a mandatory process, but definitely starting out being voluntary. And I agree we need to, we should set the standards ourselves and not wait for a lawsuits or whatever to come after us to dictate to us. I think if we can set our a set of good standards out ourselves, that will help. And I kind of liken this to something that was part of in the 90s in the healthcare industry, was the healthcare transaction companies got together and created a volunteer organization to monitor themselves, and over the maturity of time it started becoming mandatory for them to happen, but it was over a period of time as the process matured. So I think, you know, needs to be voluntary, and as the process matures will dictate how it goes from there.
All right, Mikey, you have the last word, and Andy Welsh, you're going to be on tap to, if you will, take over the remaining 15-20 minutes of this call to begin to address brass tacks. So you're up on deck. Mikey, you have the floor.
Pretty frightening to be the guy between a call and brass tacks, so I'll try and be short. I certainly agree with the voluntary stuff. My observation, just from sort of a process management point of view, is that the reason we're struggling so much with the voluntary mandatory stuff is because the authority of this particular group isn't clear. This is the first time that ICANN has ever done advisory groups like this, and those of us who've spent a lot of time in the ICANN process want to be very careful that the first time we go through a new kind of policy setting process, that we don't make mistakes. So for those of you who are impatient with us, just recognize that part of the reason that some of this is so tentative is because we're treading on new ground here. And one of the things that I think a lot of people want to be very careful of is that as we tread this new path, we don't accidentally seriously disrupt the authority and capabilities of some of the other parts of the organization. So I'm all for voluntary. I think that's the way out of this particular logjam. The logjam itself, I think the impatient folks are just going to have to grit your teeth a little bit because we're on new ground. That's it.
This is Brian. Can I jump in there, Mike?
You did not have the cue, so if you'd like to jump in front of the brass tacks to save Mikey, you have the floor, and Andy, you're still on deck.
Yeah, happy to take the brass tacks. Just a couple observations, and I go back to the beginning of the call because I think the thread, the back and forth with Paul Stahura, actually was a good spark, and this is a very important discussion. You know, and the focus there, from what I read Paul's notes to be, was this issue of a regulatory solution or mandate creating disparities and affecting competition, and or letting the market just deliver the solutions for the parties out there that want a higher security zone. And I think it's an important discussion. In that vein, how this standard is developed is important, and we're developing a standard. You know, you can call it a straw man or a baseline or whatever, but we're effectively developing a standard, and how it's developed is important, who develops it is important, and we are talking about things like a seal or a certification program. So all of the questions in the call so far about how this thing is baked and who bakes it are going to be important. And the question of costs and liabilities, whoever made the point, I'm sorry, it's not theoretical, and it's not too far down the road or far down the road. We need to talk about this because we will ultimately get to the question of who's going to bear the costs and who's going to bear the liabilities. And when you're asking registries to potentially encroach on a registrar's contractual relationship with a registrant, either through a taking down a name or other security feature of this program, you're creating potential liability. And if you look at the telecommunications industry, for example, where there have been efforts to assist in law enforcement or security, there has been funding by the government to cover the costs under this CALEA statute. There's also been immunity from liability where telecommunications service providers worked with the government to provide useful data to the government. So these are not theoretical questions. These are questions that we are going to run full force into, and the way this thing is baked is going to dictate how some of those questions should be handled. Who should cover those costs and liabilities? Should it be registry? Should it be registrars? Should it be ICANN? And the last point I'd like to make is that, Mike, on the question of vertical integration, you're quite right. There's an unresolved issue here that if vertical integration goes forward and suddenly you have an integrated registry and registrar, well, then you've changed that liability issue a bit, haven't you? Because the registry is not then encroaching on the independent contract of a registrar with the registrant. However, even if vertical integration does go forward, I can guarantee you there will continue to be standalone registries who do not integrate, who are going to continue to have these liability challenges if they participate in the high-security TLD zone. So I know that was long-winded. I'm sorry, but I think this is a very important discussion.
Thank you. All right, everyone, just a quick time check here. We have 8 minutes left in our call. The bridge does go over for, I think, an extra 15 to 20 minutes or perhaps even a half hour. What I'd like to do now is I would like to allow Andy from KPMG to take the next 15 minutes, 20 minutes to perhaps go through the items that were included on the agenda being sent out. I hope everyone would be able to stay on the line for an extra 10 minutes if your schedules permit. So without any further ado, Andy, you have the floor. Start driving us through some brass tacks, please.
All right, I'm Mr. Brass Tack today. Well, okay. So really what we wanted to do, I think, today in terms of the brass tacks is really look again at the principal statements that we introduced to the group last week. I gave a really quick overview of the principal statements, and they are in both last week's agenda and apologies on sending them out a little bit late, but in this week's agenda as well. And they center around security, availability. They talk about the registries. And they talk about the registrars. And my question, I guess, to the group is, after the introduction last week, are there any questions on the principles? Are there glaring sort of open gaps of principle at this point, or are these sort of foundational enough that we can at least sort of start with them and go forward and add others or modify as necessary? Did someone just try to join?
No, that's just silence. It doesn't happen very often, so take the opportunity and run with it, Andy.
Keep running, yeah. Okay. So let's then take these principles as sort of a working draft. We could, you know, as I was mentioning last week, for those that weren't on the call, the thought is that we're getting to the level now where we're talking about principles, we're talking about objectives and some criteria that ultimately lead to controls. And this part of the development, it's likely that we have a lot of back and forth. So as we sort of say, okay, these working draft principles look good, for instance, we'll get down to looking at the objectives and the criteria and then the controls, and we'll realize, wow, okay, you know what, there's an area that we're just not addressing, and it doesn't seem to be addressed, so we'll have to go back up and revisit the principles. So it's very much an iterative process. What I'd like to do then with the remainder of the time, and Mike, I think, you know, we can do this fairly quickly and on the wiki, we can put, I'll put this sort of principle topic, objective, and possible criteria topic material up onto the wiki for review and for comment, and then we can sort of look over everyone's comments and reviews for next week. But I think if there's no significant questions, then the first milestone is we've got at least a sort of working draft of principle structure here that we'll use.
I have no, as I said, fully encourage the use of the wiki with regard to getting through all of those possible criteria, topics, and objectives. Maybe we could break that down into one, two, you know, maybe we could do, you have high level section one, section two, and section three. Getting through all three in a 1 hour call, even with the use of the wiki, I think may be a little ambitious. But, you know, let's definitely start with one next week and try to get through that. There is one point that perhaps I'll be quiet. I've spoken enough today. You have the floor, Andy. Go.
That's okay, Mike. If I can help answer any questions, let's get out there. I'll do my best to sort of answer and move us forward in terms of the content side. Was that a no? It sounded like a no through silence. Okay.
No, you could have, please, as I said, help. I want you to sort of lead the group since you are the principal author of the straw man proposal. Perhaps let's just start deep diving right now. I mean, if, you know, you've gone over the higher level, you know, we do have a couple of minutes left on this call. Perhaps start with the, if you will, the registry IT infrastructure, which is topic 1-1, and, you know, go through the topics there. I mean,
yeah, okay, so let's start real quickly. We'll do principle 1 and get as far through as we can the next few minutes. Principle 1 is about the registry. And it's about the registry maintaining controls to provide assurance around security, availability, and confidentiality of systems and information assets. The lens that we're trying to put on here is that they're information assets supporting critical registry IT components. And I put some examples in there. You know, there probably are better ones. But again, you know, in the straw man concept, that's what the principle is about. And then we sort of go down and define the three topics. They're about performance objectives, policies and standards, procedures, software, data, and monitoring of the system. So that forms out the principle. And then we get down into the breakdown of topics, objective, and then I have what I call possible criteria topics, because that's when I start to get a little more fuzzy and I start to want to do a little more work around actual controls. So if you look at the structure, there's individual topics, and there are a handful of them. The first topic is registry IT infrastructure security. The second is registry IT infrastructure availability. And the third is confidentiality of privacy and sensitive data. Those topics relate back to the principle, and in turn, those principles should relate back to our overall goal. Underneath each topic, there's an objective. So the objective sort of tries to qualify through an objective what the topic talks about. The objective of the first one is key elements of the IT components that support the TLD infrastructure are supported and appropriately protected from unauthorized physical and logical access. So again, that's all about security. When we were making the concept paper, we really threw down criteria topics with what I'll call not enough thought. We were sort of under some pressure to get the concept done without going too far in the concept to sort of preclude good community work on it. So that's sort of where the line was drawn. So if you look over to the criteria topics that support that objective, they need a lot of work. And we probably got a lot of those wrong. We probably didn't focus in the right areas. So you'll note, I think, There'll probably be some questions on the topics, objectives, and the principles, but I'm expecting a lot of, well, what the heck were you guys thinking even, on the possible criteria topics. That's okay. I think that's an area that really needs a lot of work. Go ahead.
If I can, Andy, a quick question here, and one of the things that I was looking at here would be for a registry that would want to implement this or sort of take the lead and implement some of these criteria, there clearly is a component, I think, when we get down to 2 where we talk about, or what is it, it's 2.2 where it talks about registrar security verification. And my question here is the registry going to be obligated to go and deal with each one of its registrars, or would it not be potentially appropriate, or do you see this, the report card or certification, whatever we want to call the end outcome of our work here, being a separate program for registrars? Because wouldn't it be easier for a registry to say, I want to deal with registrars that have been verified as high security or, you know, that meet such and such criteria? Or is the registry going to have to go verify that individually itself? And I think this goes back to potentially that liability issue. Is the registry going to have to bear that cost, or could the registry rely upon ICANN to say, oh, you know, you've done this, and therefore I'm going to rely upon that? So could you perhaps address that? Because I think it goes to both the implementation as well as potential liability things that were discussed on the call today. So how do you see that working out or potentially playing out?
Mike, that's a great question. There's actually different ways that I see that could be accomplished. So maybe this could be a parting thought for today, and we can kind of pick up with this next week. So the way that it could mechanically work, first the assumption, I'm going to make a couple of assumptions. The first assumption is that we as a community, we fast forward a few months now and we have sort of a working draft of controls. So the possible criteria topics within this structure here, there are a couple of layers deeper that I'd want to go, and the next layer would be defining actual controls, supporting the criteria topics, with some illustrative control examples for what a control might look like if it were in operation. So there's a couple of levels of detail that I'd want to see. Once that's established, you could say, okay, some of these controls are clearly registry controls, and some of these controls, as we've gone through and defined them, are registrar controls. So if we're going to then say that the controls can be split, or assume that the controls could possibly be split on those dimensions, you could then, Mike, start saying, well, how does a registry get comfortable that registrars that are associated with it are doing good control practices that we've defined? And there are a couple of ways to do that. The first is the registry could, for instance, say, in order to do business with our high security or good security or whatever we're calling it zone, you registrars that want to participate in that zone have to prove to us through some mechanism that you have controls in place. And there's a lot of ways they can do that. For instance, they could use the report card approach that you'd introduce. And they could say, well, here's our report card on controls registry. We believe we've read the community standard control guidelines. We've implemented controls that are in line with those guidelines. That's an option. Another option would be to have third-party assessors go in and assess the controls. So not only is your registrar, and similar to the registry problem, they're having a third party come in and look at the controls either at a point in time and or over a period of time to see, yes, that entity has the controls in place and they're operating and they've been operating effectively. So that would be perhaps a report that could be produced for the registry to prove that the controls were in existence. That's sort of possibility number 2. And then possibility number 3 might be a combination of the first 2. So maybe it's like a self-assessment and or an audit or a review from a security group or whatever you want to call it of the control structure. So what I'll say is there's no, I don't think, right answer. There are different ways to approach it, and there are different models that are out there today for use in being comfortable with it with an entity's control environment. You know, we kind of do it all the time in my business. So there's a lot of stuff we can draw from. I'd be very interested in, you know, sort of group opinion on what would be a good way to approach that, and that is a good question for us to start to address now and have sort of in the back of our minds as we're going through the process of defining the controls.
And Andy, I appreciate that. And just to add just an additional data point to add to this discussion, the current recommendations, the policy recommendations from the GNSO basically required, I think, all registries to, I think, provide access to the registry through all ICANN accredited registrars. So when you look at the existing GTLD marketplace right now, VeriSign, for example, does not have a choice in which registrars it deals with, nor does Afilias, nor does Neustar. They are obligated to provide service to all ICANN-accredited registrars. Now, there is a potential distinction, however, in the case of sponsored registries. So .cat, .mobi, there they have the ability to set separate criteria as to who they deal with. So I just raise this point from a contractual standpoint, and again, this goes to this whole voluntary mandatory component thing, you know, this thread that is weaved through this tapestry of discussions that we've had here today. These are just some things I think we need to consider, and hopefully we'll add towards resolving this issue in the upcoming weeks. So thank you. Thank you for, again, doing this, and look forward to having this up on the wiki. We've ran over by about, I think, 7 minutes by my calculation. I know I generally go through and try to give everyone sort of a last-minute contribution. Since we're a little over, I'm probably going to since we're a little over time this week, I'm probably going to depart from that. Please don't hold that against me. Is there anyone that feels that they need to make a final parting comment before we conclude today's call? Excellent. Silence. Thank you, everyone, for your participation today. I know we continue to make slow, steady progress, but I think we're going in the right direction, and I appreciate the continued contribution from everyone. Thank you, and look forward to next week's call. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you for participating in today's conference call. You may now disconnect.